Good morning, everyone. Good morning, members. I will now.
Sitting on the sides. Nobody's in the middle.
We will now call the Choice and Innovation Subcommittee to order. Andrea, please call the roll.
Chair Rizzo?
Here.
Vice Chair Michael?
Here.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Present. Good morning.
Representative Altman? Representative Amnesty?
Here.
Representative Baker?
Here.
Representative Bankson?
Here.
Representative Basabi?
Here.
Representative Chambliss? Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Garcia? Representative McLean?
Here.
Representative Nixon? Representative Persons Malika?
Here.
Representative Porras?
Here.
Representative Roach? Representative Stark?
Here.
Representative Waldron?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrea. Please make sure all cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or placed in silent mode, everyone. If members of the public wish to speak, please fill out a public appearance form and give it to staff. Ladies and gentlemen, we have five bills on the agenda today. We have a lot of speaker cards. So members, we will keep our comments brief, concise, and to the point, and we will limit questions to two. If we have any follow-up questions and we have some time, we will come back to you. First up on our agenda is HB 883 by Representative Koster. Representative, you are recognized to explain that great bill.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and Committee. HB 883 will allow public and private schools to purchase and maintain a supply of short-acting bronchodilators and their components, otherwise known as inhalers, for students to use in the case of an emergency respiratory distress. Asthma can be a deadly disease if flare-ups are not treated immediately. Therefore, HB 883 has the potential to save students' lives without having to call 911. HB 883 allows physicians, physician's assistants, and APRNs to prescribe inhalers in the name of a school and allows pharmacists to dispense those prescriptions to the school. The bill requires the participating school districts or private schools to adopt protocol developed by a licensed physician for the administration of the inhaler by trained school personnel and requires the schools to notify parents of the adopted protocol. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, do we have any questions? Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative Koster. Thank you for this awesome bill. My question is, will the schools have multiple different bronchodilators? I'm concerned that maybe some allergies. I'm wondering what that pharmacy dispensary would look like at the school.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So they do have the option or the ability to have a variety of different inhalers on hand. And I think that it would then be incumbent upon, as it is now, the parents to notify the school of any allergies. And for, I would assume, part of the protocol would be to consider any of those allergies.
Follow up? Members, any other questions? Very well. Seeing none, we will now go into public testimony. Do we have any appearance cards? There is an amendment. I'm sorry. Go back to this. My apologies. We're backing up. We have an amendment, as I understand. Representative, you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Chair. The amendment just adds a section for private schools so that the private school language matches the public school language. That was inadvertently left out of the bill. And then the amendment also just aligns us with the Senate version.
Very well. Members, any questions on the amendment? Very well. Seeing none, we will move into, is there any public testimony for the amendment? None. Seeing none, is there any debate on the amendment? Representative Garcia, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this very good bill. I know that this bill is going to save lives, and it's going to save money also, because kids were going to get treated. So thank you very much for this good bill.
Thank you, Representative. Any other debate on the amendment? Very well, seeing none, Representative, you're recognized to close hearing amendment.
I'll waive close.
Very well, having waived close, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Seeing none, the amendment has passed. Very well, we are now back on the bill as amended. We will now take public testimony. First up, we have Dr. Nancy Lothar from Florida PTA, who is a proponent of the bill, and she wishes to appear. Are you here, doctor?
I am here, and we are very happy to
wait. Let the record show that Dr. Lothar is waving in support. We also have Ms. Anna Grace Lewis from the American Lung Association, who is here and would like to wave in support. Very well. Seeing no further testimony, do we have any debate on the bill? Representative Nixon, you're recognized.
Thanks, Chair. Rep. Koster, I really do appreciate you bringing forth this bill. I have four asthmatic children, and so having gone through an emergency with one of them, I think this will be super beneficial. It's reminiscent of a bill that I ran my freshman year regarding EpiPens. So thank you for bringing forth this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Do we have any further debate on the bill? Very well. Seeing none, Representative, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. I just think this legislation will help keep our kids in school and not doctors or hospitals and save lives, and I look forward to having your support.
Very well. Having closed on her bill, Andrea, please call the roll.
Representative Altman?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Bankson?
Yes.
Basabi?
Yes.
Chambliss? Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Nixon?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Horace?
Yes.
Roach? Stark?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
And Chair Rizzo?
Yes.
16-0.
16-0. This bill is being reported favorably, having passed. Congratulations on that great bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee.
Thank you. Moving on now, we will move to our second bill of the day. And we will hear HB 523 from Representative Kennedy. Representative Kennedy, when you're ready, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ranking Member, members. Excellence needs to be recognized and celebrated, especially in our high school graduates. Currently, Florida has four diploma recognitions, which include academic excellence, foreign language, and industry certification. Adding a fine arts diploma seal makes the statement that we prioritize the arts and we value objective achievement and merit. This new seal of fine arts program will recognize high school graduates who have attained a high level of skill in specific fine arts coursework, juried competitions, volunteer service in the arts, and the creation and submission of original works of art or performance. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the bill.
Thank you very much. Having explained her bill, members, are there any questions for the sponsor? Very well. Seeing none, we will take up any public testimony. And we have Dr. Lothar from the Florida PTA who wishes to appear in person. Doctor, you're recognized. Thank you. Let the record show that Dr. Lothar is a proponent of the bill. We have Mr. Barney Bishop, who is here from himself. He wants to wave in support. We also have Tony Carvalho from the Center for Fine Arts Education of Florida Music Educator Association, and is a proponent and waves in support. That's all the public comment, commentary and testimony that we have. Members, is there any debate on this bill? Representative Banks, and you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I'm enthusiastically supporting this. My original path in college was music education, and I think it's so important to the foundation of education, what music does and the power that it has, the arts and the expression of that, it affects all of the other courses and really causes our students, it causes the brain to function in a better way. It even causes plants to grow if you look at those studies. And so this is just a great step forward and happy to co-sponsor that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now go to Representative Garcia. You are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I co-sponsored this bill because it's a great bill, and it's very important that we promote the arts. And as Representative Bankson said, the arts and give you a better understanding of everything, and music at the end of the day is math. So thank you so much for this great bill.
We will now go to Ranking Member Valdez in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kennedy, thank you very much for bringing forward this bill. As you all know, I do walk around with my music on. I believe that music is important part of our lives, and it's good that we recognize the students that really take up the fine arts, and this designation will emphasize, the as you very well stated, that it matters to us as Floridians, so much so that here we are having, we have great fine arts performance schools throughout the state, and yet those that are involved in film, they wind up going elsewhere because we don't have a very good. So I hope that we can come up with a balance so that we can keep our kids here, right, with the work and being able to continue in their fine arts here in the state of Florida rather than leaving us and going to do great things elsewhere. I have a cousin who is a concert pianist and is also a teacher in Miami-Dade. And she does a lot of her curriculum based on music. And it's amazing to see her in action with her students. And so shout out, Magdi, I love you. You know, she's just an amazing teacher. And she started out through learning how to play the piano as a very young little girl. And I joined her in with that. But then when the piano teacher told me I had to cut my nails down below my nail bed. It's like, no, that's not for me. So she became the concert pianist. I'm supporting this bill today. I see the value in it. And thank you for thinking about the fine arts and bringing forward this seal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Members, are there any other members that wish to debate? Very well, seeing none. Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to close on this great bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wave close.
Having wave close, Andrea, please call the roll.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Bankson?
Yes.
Wasabi?
Yes.
Chambliss? Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Nixon? Persons Malika?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Stark?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Chair Rizzo?
Yes.
17-0.
Very well. Please show that the bill has or will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee.
Moving on to our third bill of the morning, we have HB 109 by Representative Andrade. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you very much, Chair. Members, House Bill 109 amends Florida law slightly to allow municipalities who are already permitted by state law to apply to create a charter school to also be one of the entities who can apply to convert an existing public school to a charter school.
Very well. Short, sweet explanation. Members, Are there any questions? Representative Waldron, you're recognized.
I have a couple questions, if I may. Reading the bill, it appears that teachers now won't have really a say in this. Is there a reason that the teachers are being removed from the decision-making process?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Waldron. The main reason is when you're looking at the practical effects of a charter school conversion process, it's really driven by parents at a school that may be struggling, or parents in a specific community who want to take more of an active role in how that school is administered. I believe that removing the two separate vote process, one of the teachers at the school and one of the parents at the school, and making it solely a decision that the parents are making, is something that is just designed to make sure that that decision is left with the parents on how that school could be administered.
Representative, follow-up?
What happens to the charter school would assume responsibility and they would purchase the facility, the infrastructure, the school? How does that work? Can you go into a little bit more detail about that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Representative Waldron. No, the charter school would not have to necessarily purchase the facility, but the charter school would be responsible for maintaining the facility. And currently, the way it's set up, a conversion charter school, while it can't be charged a rental fee for using that facility, they are fully responsible for the capital outlay and maintenance of that building going forward. And they have to come to an agreement with that school board related to exactly how they will maintain that property. Charter schools in Florida are public schools. They're just operated slightly differently.
May I ask one more?
Representative, let me go to our ranking member, and then if we have questions, if we don't have any more questions, if we still have some time, I promise I will come back to you. Ranking Member Valdez, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative Andrade. In reference to the debt of the particular school, so let's say there's a mortgage due on that. Who will be responsible for that financial impact?
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative Valdez, that would have to be part of the conversion application and also be reduced to the agreement between that charter entity, the sponsoring entity, and the school board.
Follow-up?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if a school transitions into a conversion charter school and walk through me how the teachers in that specific building will be impacted. How will their benefits be impacted? Will they now be employees of the charter entity and how will that work? This is extremely confusing to me.
You're recognized.
Chair, Representative Valdez, my understanding is currently in Florida statute, a conversion charter school, when it's going through the process of getting a plan approved and coming to an agreement with the school board, there has to be some conditions in there for both students and teachers who do not wish to remain at that school if it's converted to a charter, meaning there has to be a plan in place for those teachers to have alternative employment either with the school district or with that charter. Same goes for the students. There has to be a jurisdictional boundary as far as, not a jurisdictional boundary, but a territory around that school where it's understood that if students are residing within that boundary, they have priority to be allowed to continue attending that school. So that process is already set out in Florida statute. These teachers are still considered public employees based on current Florida law, and I don't anticipate that changing. As far as the nitty-gritty, I believe it would be somewhat fact-specific. There's only, I think, 23 out of the 726 charter schools in Florida are conversion charter schools. So I'd have to look at the differences for those 23 specific ones to see if there's been major discrepancies or differences based on the plans that were approved in the agreements that were executed between that school board and that charter. But from to the best of my understanding, their benefits should not be affected, and they should be treated as public employees still. If a municipality is the sponsoring entity in the future, that municipality still has the opportunity to commit those resources to make sure that benefits are either maintained or hopefully improved, like remaining in the Florida retirement system if another option is also provided by the charter school. But that would be a question and a determination made through the application and the contracting process to stand this up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Representative Andrade.
Thank you. Representative Nixon, you are recognized for questions.
Oh, I have a bunch, but we'll see what we can do. Rep, once converted, so I'm sure you know that charter schools can turn students away, they can deny services and say that they can't accommodate needs. So my question is, once converted, would these schools be allowed to deny services to students, or will they be required to provide for all students who are registered similarly to how current traditional public schools have to? And if they are permitted to send students away, who accepts the burden of responsibility for educating those students?
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Nixon, I believe I answered most of that question already. There's a boundary that's determined and agreed to between the conversion charter school and the school board as far as which students have to be given priority for acceptance. But it's conversion charter schools are not the same as traditional original charter schools as far as those discrepancies. There's a very active role the school board plays regardless of the sponsoring entity, and all of those questions have to be determined and agreed to between the school board and the conversion charter.
Representative, follow up?
Yeah, so I hear you, but so you're telling me that these charter schools cannot tell a parent after they convert that they don't have services to accommodate them. That's what you're saying. That's what you're putting on record right now.
You're recognized.
No, Representative Nixon, I believe I said that it would depend on the application and the agreement executed between the school board and that charter.
So I have a...
Thank you. Representative, if you have a follow-up, if we have some time, we'll come back to you. We will now recognize Representative Chambliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And good morning, Representative Andrade. Just a quick question, and forgive my tardiness. I slightly came in late on doing your presentation. But would a municipality be able to convert all of the public schools within a particular municipality into charter schools?
You're recognized.
Yes.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes, sir. And are there any examples of that conversion process that you can kind of walk us through to kind of see what that looks like? And again, forgive me if you've already kind of covered it, because I'm not familiar with the charter school conversion process. I have never seen one. So could you kind of just walk through, well, this is kind of how it goes, one, two, three. Do you mind doing that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Chambliss, thanks for that question. So while I can't say whether or not Pembroke Pines engaged in a full conversion process for the five charter schools that Pembroke Pines operates, I believe Lake Wales did. The whole impetus for this bill was my front row seat witnessing a conversion process in my community that was triggered by the turnaround process that we have here in Florida. You know, if a traditional government-run public school is failing, we have this turnaround process where if they don't get their act together over the course of several years, they are forced to convert to a charter. I witnessed that process and saw how dysfunctional it was and believed that if municipalities with the resources and the concern for the people within that municipality are willing to help parents who want to try and fix something before it goes to that kind of painful, difficult process that turnaround kind of imposes, they should be allowed to head that off before that decision is taken out of their hands. So I believe Lake Wales has good success with the charter schools they operate. I believe Pembroke Pines does as well. But that process is essentially, either the city or parents get together. The city can't make the decision on their own. The decision to convert a government-run school to a charter in this process is one that's subject to at least the vote of a majority of voting parents in that school. So those parents are the ones who have to say, this is what we want. There has to be buy-in from the parents of the children that are attending that school. That's the beginning of that whole process. If the parents make that call, then the difficult part of getting lawyers and accountants all together, coming up with a plan that has to be approved by DOE, coming up with an agreement with the school board begins. And that's an even more involved process. But by statute, it has to occur within a set time frame of about 1 year. If you think about like a middle school, you know, you have 3 years of parents experiencing that school. Those parents are going to move on after that. So a lot of times those parents, even if the majority of them would want to, they're up against a time clock in a very arduous, daunting process if they're going it alone, if they feel like they're going it alone. All this bill says is that municipalities who can create charter schools right now from scratch, if they wanted to, like apply to create them, are now included in the list of entities that can assist and participate in the conversion process as well.
Thank you. Representative, if you have any follow-up, we'll recognize you when we come on back for a second bite of that apple. And if I could just make one point of clarification, the Pembroke Pines charters were not conversion charters. They started off as municipal charters. Do we have any other member in questions? Representative Waldron, we're back to you.
My question is, under this bill, it's entirely possible that after a certain amount of time, there could be no remaining traditional public schools in a county, correct?
You're recognized.
Representative Waldron, I don't believe that a city would want to take on the responsibility of educating students outside of that city. And I don't even believe that this bill, by implication, would allow for them to apply to convert a charter school, a public school outside of their city boundaries.
Follow up?
Well, within a county, you're saying that you can convert public schools, correct, into a charter school, right?
You're recognized.
Representative Waldron, you can right now.
Right.
Okay. Very well. We are going to Representative Nixon for a follow up.
So thank you, Chair. What if the attendance zone for the school goes into another municipality? Schools are run by the county. I'm really interested in it.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative Nixon, that boundary, the attendance zone, is something that has to be negotiated and discussed prior to a plan being finalized and approved, an agreement being finalized and approved.
Representative Nixon, you have a follow-up?
I do. So many questions. Okay. Will the district be required to rewrite boundaries even if the neighboring schools are at capacity?
You're recognized.
Will the district be?
Yeah. Representative Nixon, do you want to just explain a little
further? Yeah. Will the school board districts be required to rewrite the boundaries again based on the fact that you're converting these schools, and so with the municipalities, like I stated in the first question, let me ask another one. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
What's the process for future municipalities to convert the charter back to the school district under your bill?
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Nixon, the contract review has to occur every 3 years for these charter schools. So I believe that the process would be a discussion and a contracting between those schools and the school board. Now, whether or not there is a statutorily defined process, there might be some vagueness and confusion if parents got together and said, hey, we've changed our mind. This was a terrible idea 15, 20 years down the line. that's something that if you believe needs to be clarified, that's fine. I haven't seen an example where those 23 schools have been clamoring to go back.
Representative Chambliss, you are recognized for a follow-up question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of going back to the previous line of questioning, if I'm not mistaken, there have been circumstances where charter schools have started, but then they particularly may have failed or had to have closed down. Who bears the responsibility, and how does the process work if a charter school is converted under this particular provision in statute, but then that charter school fails or has to close down? What's the procedure at that point?
Representative recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative Chambliss, I believe that any of those discussions would be taken up in either the initial application and approval of a proposal or in the negotiations between the school district and that charter entity. Every contract I've ever reviewed, every contract I've ever drafted, has a default provision. What happens if everything goes wrong? I don't believe that any lawyer who'd be participating in this process would not make sure that some consideration's taken if, for whatever reason, an entity defaults.
Representative, you have a follow-up? Okay. Any other questions? Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Andrade, is there a standardized application in existence for all school boards to follow, or will it be up to each school district and school board to come up with their own criteria and application process?
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. And Representative Valdez, I don't want to speak too much out of turn. The Department of Education was already tasked with coming up by rule and establishing a rule for the conversion school voting process. I don't know whether or not they have a standardized form because, again, there are only 23 conversion charter schools in Florida today. I don't know if there is right now. I can get that information from the Department of Education, I believe. If I were to guess, if there's only 23 examples, I probably wouldn't have recommended the state agency create a standard form.
Ranking member, follow-up? Okay, we're going to allow one question each, please. And do remember that we have a very comprehensive staff analysis on this bill. Many of the questions that have been asked, all the answers are there in the staff analysis. Representative Nixon, you are recognized for one question.
Thank you, Chair. And so, because I'm really still confused as a parent, right? So take, for instance, because the schools are operated by the county, right? So if the municipality converts, right, will children from outside that municipality, are they going to be allowed, they're allowed to stay in that school, or how does that work?
Representative, you're recognized.
Representative Nixon, if I hadn't had coffee this morning, I would have said asked and answered, but the jurisdictional boundaries, the attendance zone boundaries for any conversion charter school is an active, engaged negotiation and discussion between the school board and the sponsoring entity right now. The sponsoring entity, if this bill passes, would just be a municipality, and so the discussion about the attendance zone for that conversion charter school would be exactly the same as it has been for the last 23 conversion charter schools that exist today.
Thank you for the clarity on that. Representative Chambliss, you are recognized for one question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a clarifying question. Earlier, you were talking with Rep. Waldron. I think I was a little confused with the term, and this probably is in the staff analysis, by the way, but I was a little confused by the term municipality. So, for example, on the top of my head, when I think of municipalities, I don't think of just cities. You know, I think of villages, I think of counties. And so my question is, in this particular provision, what is the definition of municipalities? Is it just that cities, villages, and counties, or is it, or are we just talking about just cities?
You're recognized.
Thank you. And Representative Chambliss, thanks for that question. I'm definitely not just talking about cities. I'm talking about any incorporated municipality. And I hate using the term in the definition explanation, but this whole process was so I woke up a few months ago, had a conversation with a friend of mine who disagrees with me politically on every topic, and did a little bit of research because he asked, well, what if the city of Pensacola wants to convert these schools? Because my friend was frustrated with Escambia County School Board about some dysfunction he was witnessing there. I looked it up and I saw in statute, and it's literally five lines in Florida law. Section one of this statute in 1003 says that municipalities are on the list of entities that can apply to create a charter school. And then I look two lines down in that same statute and see that municipalities aren't on the list of entities. They're the only ones cut out of the list of entities that can be the applying organization to convert a public school to a charter. And then I did more research and found an attorney general opinion from 2013 where the town of White Springs, a very small town, was facing the closure of their only school within the town by their school board. And they were desperate to try and keep it open because this is the only school in their city. They want to take care of the kids in their city. And they asked the attorney general for an opinion on whether or not they could apply to convert that public school to keep it open because the school board was going to close it. And unfortunately, the attorney general said, because you were listed in that first line, but you weren't listed in that fifth line, you are unfortunately not, by statute, allowed to participate in the conversion process to keep that school open for the kids in your town. So it's definitely not just cities.
Thank you. Representative Andrade, we're going to move on. And if you could just answer a simple yes or no, and then we'll move on from there. Representative, do you have any amendments to this bill?
Yes.
Very well. Representative Andrade, you are recognized to explain your amendment, barcode 651949.
Thank you very much, Chair. Members, this amendment states that if a school district has declining enrollment of at least 1% for two consecutive years, that school district, if they have vacant land or vacant property, must open up the opportunity for a charter entity to purchase that land through the public distribution of lands to open and start a school, and that is the amendment.
Very well. Having explained his amendment, do we have any questions on the amendment? Ranking Member Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Andrade, so when you say that they could purchase that land, so that means that whatever debt is incurred from that particular building will then be the responsibility, and that building will no longer be on the record as property for that specific district.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Valdez, I need to double check the amendment, but I believe it discusses vacant land or unused land. I don't anticipate there being any debts on that, but yeah, in any sale, the purchase price is the purchase price, and if someone is over-leveraged and they have more in cost than the value of the land, it's a responsibility of the owner that's required to sell, that's selling that land.
Okay.
Thank Representative, you. Do you have a follow-up?
No, sir. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Ranking Member. We will now go to Representative Dunkley for questions on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Andrade, can you answer for me if there's any data of you have where there's 1% enrollment? Do you have any data of how many of those schools that are within that range?
Representative, recognize.
Yes, ma'am, I do. For the sake of time, I can get with you after committee if you'd like me to give you all that data.
I'd appreciate if you could just email it. That's fine.
Representative Dunkley, do you have a follow-up question? No? Anyone else? Representative Nixon, you are recognized for questions on the amendment.
Thanks, Chair. If 6 months pass and no charter school wants the access property, Why is it required to revert to housing? What if the community wants a library or a park? Is this a preemption of the municipality and the community members?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Nixon, I just believe that one of the biggest issues in Florida right now is affordable housing. I thought that that was, after education, probably the most important thing for that land to be used for.
Representative Nixon, do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thanks, Chair. If a current charter school moved into a used district building, would they be allowed to profit from selling that original property?
You're recognized.
Representative Nixon, that's a... There are so many different scenarios in that context. Yep. It would be... I'm unable to give you an answer just because of how broad that question actually is.
It is pretty broad, Representative. Do you want to perhaps bring that down a little bit?
Thanks, Chair. I mean, it's just a simple yes or no. Like, if they move into a district building, would they initially, like, if they want to sell it eventually and move somewhere else, or if they get shut down, or, you know, can they sell the property? Will they profit? Can they profit from it? Because a lot of charter schools are run by for-profit entities, right?
Representative, I believe Representative Andrade's response is dead on. That's an extremely open-ended question with many different scenarios. So if you have another one, I'll recognize you for another question. Go ahead, please.
So districts can't build schools if enrollment doesn't support the need. If that district has declining enrollment collectively, would this amendment allow a new charter school to be built? Could the shared capital funds be used to build another school?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Nixon, I believe that in Florida law, we had this, we've taken up this question over multiple years. Non-conversion charter schools, if they're existing charter schools, have certain protections to receive an adequate proportionate share of the capital outlay that school districts receive. It's based on per capita, the number of students actually being served. I guess the answer is yes, they'd receive, hopefully, continuing on, the same fair per capita share of capital outlay for the number of students they're actually serving.
Let's see, we're going to go to Representative Chambliss. Do you have a question?
Very quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there an option to just lease that property, or does it have to be an actual property purchase?
Recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative Chambliss, that's a very good question. I don't know whether or not the DMS procurement process has that option, but I assume that that there are options like that if someone comes with a proposal for lease that's beneficial to the state. Again, this is a procurement process. In the procurement process, land is not given out to private entities by the state for free. So there has to be some type of proposal in place. Whether or not a lease is an option is something that I'd have to either double-check additional statute or do some more research for you on.
Representative, do you have a follow-up? Very well. Okay, do we have any other members with questions? Representative Dunkley, you are recognized for one follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Andrade, I wanted to just make sure I heard correctly. When Rep. Nixon asked about the land use, and I think you mentioned something about affordable housing, and I'm hopefully it's not outside of the scope of this bill. And my mind just went to being from Broward County, and we know we built a lot of affordable homes. One of the things I heard was density issues and stuff. So if for counties like mine that would have land and that is available, and your option, I think you said affordable housing could be built. So what happens if that is not an option for affordable housing? And hopefully you didn't answer the question and it went over my head.
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Representative Dunkley, I'm not sure of the scenario where it because of our Live Local Act last year, I'm not sure if there is going to, in reality, be a scenario where that land couldn't be used for affordable housing. But the amendment does cite to the statute on the process for all of that. So I'm happy to go over all of that offline with you. And I will note one thing. I'm going to wave my clothes. If you hate the underlying bill, you should probably support this amendment because it will TP the bill.
Okay, thank you for that point of clarification on how to kill a bill.
Not kill the bill.
No. Thank you. TP the bill. Thank you very much. Seeing as how we went to Representative Dunkley for a follow-up to a follow-up, Representative Nixon, do you have one more bite at this apple? Okay, thank you very much. And Representative Chambliss, do you have a follow-up to a follow-up? Okay, thank you very much. Very well. Finishing with questions, completing them. Now we will go to public testimony on the amendment. And we do have several. We will limit comment to 2 minutes. We have Ms. Crystal Etienne representing herself, and she wishes to appear in person. Ms. Etienne, you are recognized. And next on deck, we will have Dr. Lothar with Florida PTA. You're recognized.
Good morning. My name is Krista Etienne, and I've driven 500 miles from Rep. Porras's district to say I oppose this amendment. I'm a seventh grade teacher. I teach in West Homestead. I teach K-8 civics. And what we see is these charter school corporations that come in and sell these dreams to these parents, pull their students, send them to the charter schools. 2-3 years later, they come back to the public schools. They can't read. They can't do math. They don't test any better. And then 2 more years later, those charter schools, 9 times out of 10, will up and disappear with taxpayer dollars. For this amendment to essentially eminent domain failing schools due to low 1% population decrease, that's a storm. That's housing. That's all kinds of things. We had the immigrant bill passed last year, and I had a good 1-2% of my students at West Homestead disappeared. So the fact that we're willing to just give state tax dollar property away is absurd to me. It's insulting that you would be willing to give away taxpayer property for pennies on a dollar, I'm sure, to the corporations that write these bills and forget the teachers and forget the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Etienne. Next up, Dr. Lawler with Florida PTA, followed by Mr. Kennedy, Ryan Kennedy, Florida Citizens Alliance. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Madam Ranking Member. We rise in opposition to this amendment. A number of factors remain unclear. Unfortunately, the bill was filed after the amendment was filed after 6 last night. We've been unable to get with the sponsor of the amendment to clarify some of our questions. This does look like it involves the transfer of public assets, and it is not clear in the bill that it is by purchase to entities that are not accountable to the public in the same way. This is a decision made by state agencies, which are staffed by appointed officials, again, not elected by the public. And again, to echo a point that was made by a previous speaker, 1% decrease in enrollment can be the result of natural birth rate decline, can be the result of legislation, can be the result, as in Taylor County, of a major employer moving out of the county, can be the result of a natural disaster. And so for those particular reasons, we are going to stand in opposition to this amendment today. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Up next, we have Ryan Kennedy from the Florida Citizens Alliance, followed by Dr. Sue Woltansky. Very well. Show the record that Mr. Kennedy waves in support of the amendment. Dr. Woltansky, you are recognized. And next up, we have Mr. Chris Moya from Charter Schools USA.
Thank you so much. I'm Sue Woltansky. I'm a Monroe County School Board member, which means I came even farther than you did. This amendment is, I want to state that I'm here speaking for myself. This amendment is overly prescriptive, and it dictates what a local community must do with excess property. These decisions should be made at the local community level and not etched in state statute. If a school district has excess property, is the best use of that public property automatically a charter school? And while affordable housing is definitely a challenge where I live and across Florida, there are some communities that have more pressing needs. For example, here in Tallahassee, there are areas that sorely lack preschool and child care centers. And when an elementary school was under capacity, it was converted to an early childhood care center, early childhood center. That was something that this community desperately needed. In Monroe, underutilized schools and district-owned properties have been converted into the Key West City Hall, community parks, the Isla Mirada Library, and our county health department. The monument to the victims of the 1935 hurricane are on school district property. We also have three charter schools that are in place in former school, in our former schools. Currently, we have a fire department that's approached us with the hope that we can transfer a small plot of land to them for some necessary storage areas. And we're also in the process of building 150 affordable housing units on school district property in Key West. But that construction requires that we relocate our administration building, which we hope to move to a historic school building that is in desperate need of renovation.
10 seconds, Doctor.
These are things our community wants and needs, and we shouldn't have to wait 6 months in case a charter school wants to utilize that property before we move forward to address our community needs.
Thank you, Doctor. Your time has expired. Thank you very much. We now have Mr. Chris Moya from Charter Schools USA, who is a proponent of the amendment. Sir, you're recognized, followed by Ms. Crystal Etienne. We have a, she already spoke. And next up will be Danny McMillan. Mr. Moya, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to try to be very, very brief. One, line 31 of the amendment says a charter school receiving surplus real property pursuant to this subsection may not sell or dispose of the property without the written permission of the sponsor being the school board. So I hopefully that answers that question. Number two, a couple districts have been mentioned. Taylor would not qualify under this. Its shrinkage was 0.38, it would not qualify. And Monroe County grew by 4.19%, so all of those points being made, Monroe County is not part of this. Let me tell you what it is. This legislature has sided with students. It has said the money follows the kid, and we're going to have choice. Legislatively, the language is there. Practically, there are counties where there is no more land left. Just doesn't exist. Intelligently, I give them credit, districts over the years have raised about $4 billion in referendum money, and they have began land banking. Any piece of property where a charter could have gone was bought over the last decade. So while the legislation, Parents' Bill of Rights, all of these things are possible, there are practically no places to develop in Broward County. Broward County would certainly qualify under this, and I will remind you of this. Broward County's properties have gone up, property values have gone up 56% over the last 4 or 5 years. Including inflation, inflation's gone up about 19.6% in the last 4 years. But the population of students has gone down by 20,000 students. So 56% more money for capital outlay, about 10 to 12% reduction in students. This is about practical barriers to developing choice.
You've got 10 seconds, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moya. We now will go to Danny McMillan from, she waves in opposition. Damaris Allen, Families for Strong Public Schools, waves in opposition. O'Reilly Colon waves in opposition. Mr. Tom Serra, Miami-Dade Public Schools, is an opponent and waves in opposition. Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida's Future, waves in support of the amendment. And we have Norton Dillard, Florida Family Institute, waves in opposition. Very well, that's it for public debate testimony on Rep. Andrade's amendment. Do we have anyone in debate? Ranking member, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Representative Andrade, thank you for answering our questions and helping to bring clarity to this changing bill, if you will. I am concerned about the way it's proposed at this moment and the fiduciary responsibilities between the elected bodies of the school boards, of which I respect each and every member of the school board of all 67 counties. That work is hard. Been there, done that, and I know how difficult it is to sit behind that dais and make those decisions. Everyone knows I am pro-choice in every sense of the word, and I'm concerned about, again, the fiduciary responsibilities and how this will impact facilities, budgets that school boards have on paying down their debt due to the building of schools. I am concerned that maybe if how the procedure will be where a school district, the school board may have already plans for a site at a vacant piece of property that they may have. And the question has really not been answered if that property then would be at risk or in risk of being able to be swept away. So it's still a very gray area, if you will, for me. And I understand not so much the overarching piece of legislation, but more so the procedures of how to implement this piece of legislation, which is beyond our scope of duties. And that's where my real concerns come from. So today, I will be down on the bill, and it's this first committee stop.
Excuse me, we're talking about the amendment.
Oh, the
at
amendment.
This moment. We're
I'm
debating
sorry.
On the
amendment.
Rep. Andrade's amendment.
So no, that's it. I'm done.
Okay.
That was debate for the bill and everything, so I'm done.
Well, you're done on debate on the amendment. Let me just amend that. Very well. Do we have any other members wishing to debate the amendment? Hi, Representative Nixon. Thanks, I was just waiting for a little eye contact there. You are recognized for debate on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Rep, so in your closing on this amendment, I would appreciate, because I know the gentleman came up and he stated that in the amendment it says a charter school receiving surplus real property may not sell or dispose of such property without written permission. He stated of the school board, but it says of the sponsor. And so I need clarity, like, who is the sponsor? Could it also be the charter review commission, because if that is the case, then that is not a local entity, I believe. That's someone that's in Tallahassee. Also, in regards to what I stated earlier as it relates to if charter schools, I'm voting down on this amendment, clearly, because I feel that I know you stated that the conversion charter schools would have to basically, I think you said, abide by the same rules that the traditional public schools would if they have declining enrollment. But I know that regular charter schools don't.
Representative, let's keep it just to the amendment, please. Okay. Let's keep your comments on debate just to the amendment, which we went over at length.
Right. So the reason I'm voting down on this amendment is because the charter is permitted, the charter will be permitted to build even if the district on a whole doesn't have adequate numbers of students to fill those public buildings being paid for by taxpayers. I think that's fiscally irresponsible. And so based on this, theoretically, you could have a charter school on every corner. I think that's a horrible use of tax dollars. There's no provision for allowing a municipality to deny charter locations, which would be horrible in some instances for municipal planning purposes. So I really urge my colleagues to vote down on this amendment.
There. Thank you, Representative Nixon. We will now go and recognize Representative Roach in debate on the amendment. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for this good bill and this good amendment. I just wanted to also express my appreciation for Mr. Moya. I thought his remarks were a very good distillation of the issue that we're debating in this amendment. And maybe I'm oversimplifying things, but I see this amendment as a way to prevent some gamesmanship that is taking place in the terms of this land banking, where districts are putting up every procedural roadblock that they can to thwart legislative intent in allowing money to follow the students and allowing parents to make the decision about what school is best for their children. And in response to my colleague's assertion that, you know, there's no mechanism to stop charter schools, the mechanism is don't send your kids there. That's the mechanism, but that's not what parents want. And parents are electing to leave public schools and pursue the options that are best for their children. I'll be voting up on the amendment. I would encourage my colleagues to vote up on the amendment. And I would like to clarify for my colleagues, we've had some discussion here, that this amendment is going to necessitate a title change, which is the reason that the bill will procedurally be temporarily postponed. But I would encourage my colleagues in this committee to vote up on this good amendment. Thank you for bringing it.
Thank you, Representative Roach. Do we have anyone else in debate on Representative Andrade's amendment? Very well. Seeing none, Representative Andrade, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, members, please vote up, and I look forward to hopefully having the same discussion next week.
Thank you. Representative Andrade, having closed on his amendment, Andrea, please call. We will see. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Very well. Show the amendment adopted.
Thank you, Chair.
Ladies and gentlemen, pursuant to House Rule 7.113D, show HB 109 temporarily postponed because amendment barcode 651949 was adopted, and that amendment changed the relating to clause. Thank you, Representative Andrade. We will now move on to HB 7025, Representative Tribulsi's bill. However, Representative Tribulsi is not here due to familial concerns, and everyone on the committee, I hope we extend and we will extend our deepest condolences on her family's loss and pray for her to get back here safely and quickly. However, Representative McLean has the honor of presenting her bill on her behalf. Representative McLean, you are recognized to explain HB 72025.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and certainly our condolences go out to Representative Tribulsi and her family, and we'll be keeping her in our prayers. Members, I will be presenting House Bill 7025. Last year, we passed House Bill 1. In House Bill 1, we include provisions regarding the deregulation of public schools in an effort to provide more flexibility and efficiency and reduce unnecessary regulation. The bill required the State Board of Education to develop and recommend to the governor and the legislature for adoption during this legislative session repeals and revisions to the Florida Early Learning Education Code, Chapters 1000 through 1013, Florida statutes. This PCB is for that purpose. Covers several items. I will walk through some of those, and then I will try to answer questions as best that I can. We'll provide flexibility for district school boards to determine the adequate number of instructional materials in each classroom. It also provides superintendents with flexibilities on instructional material reporting timeframes and removes the requirement for submitting a district school board plan for instructional materials use. Reduces unnecessary testing by reducing the administration of the VPK progress monitoring assessments to 2 times per year rather than 3 times. And it removes the requirement for duplicative assessments of students in DJJ programs. Requires any changes made by the State Board of Education to components in school grades model or the school grading scale must go into effect in the following school year at the earliest to provide school districts ample time to prepare for the changes. Removes the requirement that school districts have to offer a virtual instruction option. Authorizes a school district virtual program to provide the equipment and access necessary for participation to any full-time student enrolled in the program, regardless of income status. Revises the requirements that each early learning coalition submit a school readiness plan to Department of Education, and that they review that plan every 3 years rather than 2 years. Removes the requirement for the State Board of Education to establish the tuition and out-of-state fees for developmental education and for credit instruction that may be counted towards certain post-secondary degrees. Reveals the competency-based pilot program that was last year. Repeals single-gender programs authorized in law. This is duplicative of federal law. Repeals the requirement that all automotive service technology education programs must be accredited. Removes language regarding special baccalaureate approval process for St. Petersburg College. And finally, the bill repeals reporting relating to fine arts, charter technical career centers, middle grade career courses, academically high-performing school districts. Committee of Practitioners under the No Child Left Behind Act, and implementation of school improvement and accountability. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that detailed explanation, Representative McLean. We will now open up to member questions. Representative Chambliss, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Representative McLean.
Good morning.
I understand that this is not your bill, and my heart goes out to Representative Tobolsky. Definitely praying for her. But if you could speak to the differences between this bill and the Senate bill, to the best of your knowledge, that would be very, very helpful.
Representative, you're recognized.
I appreciate you having that kind of faith in my capability, but it was enough for me just to try to go through this bill, and I'd not be able to do that. I'm sorry.
Very well. Representative Chambliss, a follow-up? Okay. Any other member in questions? Very well. Seeing none, we will now move on to public testimony. And we have a few appearance cards. We have Mr. Ryan Kennedy, Florida Citizens Alliance, who is a proponent of the bill. Mr. Kennedy, you are recognized, and we will limit the time to 2 minutes for public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. Ryan Kennedy, the Florida Citizens Alliance, group of over 260,000 members in Florida. Two-thirds of those are parents with children 17 and under in home. We want to thank the sponsor, who sadly is not here right now, but for bringing this bill forward. This bill is being compared as the counterpart of sorts to the Senate version, and we like a lot of the stuff within this bill version. We would encourage an amendment in two areas. The first is on virtual schools, and we do appreciate the expansion of some of that language related to virtual schools. It's much needed, but one hindrance we've seen with working with certain virtual schools is that state statute states that they must have a physical location in Florida, and all teachers in that school need to be have a Florida teacher's license. A lot of virtual schools, especially some of the top ones, are multi-state. They service people all across the country, especially military families who move a lot. And so they pull on teachers from all different parts of the country. And so we would encourage an amendment to be able to provide better access to those virtual schools as well. We'd also encourage an amendment to lines 645 through 652, which has to deal with the processing fee for some of the challenges, book challenges. I can understand where this language has come from, but we're afraid, especially at Florida Citizens Alliance, we've been advocating for the removal of obscene materials, that we just want to make sure that this is not a hindrance to that process. For example, Collier County recently removed over 300 books with that five book challenge threshold. That would be a lot of people you would need to get to object to books. I mean, the school district removed it. They found those books objectionable. So
you've got 10 seconds, sir.
That's just an amendment we'd like to encourage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Up next, we have Dr. Woltansky, all the way from Tavernier, as explained before. Doctor, you're recognized for 2 minutes. And it says here that you are an opponent of the bill.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm an opponent of the bill.
Well, you're recognized. You can explain yourself.
Again, I'm speaking for myself, although I am a school board in Monroe County. I appreciate the attempts to deregulate our K-12 public schools. I think this deregulates the administration of our K-12 public schools. It won't affect what's happening in the classrooms very much. There's very, very few things that will deregulate a student's experience that are in K-12 public schools. As for the part that I really like about this bill is the $100 fee for if you've challenged more than five books. That fee is waived if the book is found to be obscene. But, you know, I'm sure you've seen the data that the majority of the books that are being challenged across the country come from 11 individuals, and two of them live here in Florida. And it is a cumbersome burden to small school districts to have staff to review those books in time. And last year you passed a bill that said if there was any sexual conduct, which is not the same as an obscenity, you know, that that those books had to be pulled immediately. So those books are removed from the shelves while small districts are having to read and review the books to see if they can be put back on. It is a burden, and we need to make sure that the books that are being challenge that are being removed from the children are actually obscene. If they are, that money is refunded. If they are challenged for frivolous reasons, well, maybe it will stop that, and we'll be able to focus on getting the books that really are, could be harmful to children out of the libraries instead of looking at picture books like No David. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Woltansky, if you could just, for my own edification, are you a proponent or are you an opponent of this bill?
Oh, I guess I would, why don't you put that I'm for information?
Information only.
Would be a proponent if it had more things for children.
Okay, so let the record show that Dr. Woltansky was for information only. And we have Mr. Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida's Future. He waves in support. We have Ms. Frazier, with Sharon Frazier Stevens, representing her community, who is also here for information only. And Ms. Frazier Stevens, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Rep. Rizzo, you from Hialeah?
I sure am.
I got family living in Hialeah.
All roads lead to Hialeah, my friend.
Thank you. And everything you can find in Hialeah, too, especially that good Cuban food and that coffee. Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chair. My name is Sharon Frazier. I'm here representing my community. Education is most important in all of our families. The first thing my grandmother told me was, when you're 18, you're on your own. You can go to college, you can go get a job, you can go to technical school. I chose to go to nursing college. 34 years of nursing. Sir, I'm so appreciative of all you guys have been. But my community is in a crisis. I'm from Miami-Dade County. From county line to Florida City, and sometimes I go down to the Keys, and I love the Keys. They're some of the most beautiful people you can meet. But I know we ain't talking about charter schools. I had parents. I've been an advocate for 31 years, coming from Syracuse, New York, after I left Miami to come back here in 97 to take care of my sick mother. I am a caregiver. My mama died July 21st. I'm staying strong because I keep myself active. My dad is a three-war veteran. My mom is buried in Lake Worth, Florida, with my dad. That's the most beautiful thing that the military ever did for my mom and my dad. My son is a 4-year Iraqi veteran. My grandson just came from the Navy. He's now stationed in Jacksonville, Florida. My husband, I'm a widow of an Army veteran for 10 years. And that's my brother, Mr. Kenneth Brown, Desert Storm veteran. Those are the people who I take care of. Those are what I tell our children. Be productive in your community. Come off these social media pages doing all this stupidity. But education is the key to your success. You don't have to go to college. I got a friend of mine. He's a veteran, Air Force. He got a program we're trying to put in Dorsey Skills Center in Miami-Dade County, Liberty City, an underprivileged community. It's called Marine Yacht Academy, where kids can make $37 an hour. $37 after doing a 6-month certification. Certification, not a degree. Working on boats, ships, welding, all kind of stuff. And we got veteran friends. He went and got the vets to help him. So please, when y'all make these, it's our tax dollars. I'm a small business. I made $10,000 and had to get $4,000 back. It hurts me to see my tax dollars be wasted with charter schools and all that stupidity.
I have 10 seconds.
No more profit over people. No more. I am tired in Dade County. Tired of me to go back to Onondaga County.
Ms. Frazier-Stevens, on behalf of all of us here from the committee and certainly from the House, and I know the Speaker would say this, thank you for being here. Thank you for your family's commitment to the United States and to everyone in Florida. Thank you. And we're very sorry for your loss as well. God bless her. Very well. We're moving on to Marion Brown, representing his community, and he is also here for information only. Mr. Brown, you're recognized.
Yes, good morning, madam. I kind of got twisted up. I'm sorry. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm Marion Brown. I'm also here. I'm 4th generation of the United States. 4. I also have, my dad was a Purple Heart, and my granddad seen things that was horrible. But to see things that, I grew up in public schools, and I understand the meaning of a public school. And I understand the meaning of a charter school. I'm not against it. But I done seen the disadvantage of a charter school when children have got released from charter schools and sent back to public schools, and the funds stayed over to the charter schools. Taxpayers' dollars also fund charter schools, not in 90%, but a certain percentage of it. So you have in public land that's getting dispersed to charter schools. I have seen where charter schools took public land and didn't use it for charter schools, but then turn around and make a profit. So with that said, our children need guidance. We do need guidance on our students. And public schools is where I'm pretty sure a lot of you all went, and a lot of you all learned in public schools. So public schools was the foundations of everything. So my perspective on life is if we go back, we don't have to go all the way back. But when I was growing up, I got chastised by all the neighbors. So if all you was adults, I got a whooping from the whole group. And when I got home, I got another one. So that's how I was raised. I was raised by a village. And that's the thing that we're getting away from. We're getting away from that village of raising. So once we can get back to that village of raising, this community and all communities will be better. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. And once again, on behalf of all of us, the committee and the Florida legislature, thank you very much for your service. Thank you. Do we have anyone else? Very well. We have no more appearance cards and public testimony. Members, we are now in debate on Chair Trabelsi's bill being represented here today by Representative McClain. Do we have any members wishing to debate? Representative Bankson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say thank you again to our chair that you spent time with me last week as we began to delve into this. And to Representative Chambliss, I had some of those same issues. What about the Senate side? And I just want to say, first of all, of course, our hearts go out to Representative Trabelsi. Thank you to Rep. McClain for filling in here. And they've alleviated some of the concerns. Again, the gentleman that spoke here, those are some of the concerns that I heard from constituents. What I love about what we're getting right on the House side, it is addressing and adjusting some of the concerns that were there. And I just appreciate that the work that's gone into this. My grandmother, turning 106 this year, lifelong educator. She educated in Southern California in a bilingual district, and her foundation was Reading Foundation. And so that's really in my core. And that's something that I believe we've seen an adjustment on the House side of that to make sure that we're not simply passing along. That third to fourth grade is a very important time when it comes to Reading Foundation. So I really believe that, and thank you again to Rep. McClain, who's been able to help explain that. I think we're getting some good things right in this. I love to take the handcuffs off of those that are doing the work. And so I like the notion of deregulation as long as we're not losing the safeguards that are there for the good of our students. So I am up on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Bankson. Do we have any other members in debate? Very well. I will take a little moment here. This is as the representative explained, this is part of a deregulation effort. And this particular bill, to answer, go back to what Representative Jambliss was talking about, this particular bill is our version, the House's version, to Senator Simon's bill over in the Senate that has already passed off the floor. And so everything in this particular bill is in Senator Simon's bill. Now, will this be the final version of it? We don't know. Let's see. I think this is a process the Speaker has allowed for representatives to go ahead and be very engaged in the process. So as we move on, I urge every single member on this committee to vote up on this great bill. Very well. Seeing no more debate, Representative McClain, you are recognized to close on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your great remarks that you just made, I will close. So thank you.
It's a lot of Hialeah love in the room here today. Very well. Having closed on his bill, Andrea, please call the roll.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Bankson?
Yes.
Basabi?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
McClain?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Nixon? Yes. Persons Malika? Porras?
Yes.
Roach? Stark?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
And Chair Rizzo?
Yes.
16 yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays. Having been reported favorably, we congratulate the bill sponsor and, of course, the stand-in. Great stand-in today, Representative McClain. Thank you very much. Committee, we will now hear our final bill of the morning. And it is from one of our very own members who will present from the podium up front as she makes her way. We have Representative Dunkley that will present HB 553. As she makes her way up, I want to thank everyone for being here who is out here in the audience today, everyone that has signed up to speak. Thank you very much for your time, your patience, and for your attendance here today. Representative Dunkley, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Let me turn on the microphone. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity to present HB 553 relating to career theme courses. Chair Rizzo, Vice Chair Michael, Ranking Member Valdez, and my subcommittee members, thank you. House Bill 553 increases awareness and promotes career and technical education opportunities for middle school students. It requires a school district to inform students and parents during course selection of the Career and Professional Academy of career-themed courses available to that student. It also requires the strategic plan required under the Career and Professional Education Act to be constructed to include strategies that inform and promote career technical education opportunities available in the district. And it requires data collected by the Department of Education on student achievement in industry-certified career education programs and career-themed courses to be included in the annual Career and Technical Education Review conducted by the commissioner. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much for that great explanation. Members, do we have any questions on Representative Dunkley's bill? Very well. Seeing none, we will now move on to public testimony. Do we have any requests? And we do. We have Mr. Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida's Future, who waves in support. We also have Mr. Brian Simmons, who is an educator, who also waves in support. And that is all the public testimony that we have today. Members, we are now in debate. Anyone wishing to debate on Representative Dunkley's great bill? Representative Chambliss, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wanted to congratulate Representative Dunkley on, carrying this important issue on. It's a great bill. I'm definitely up on it, but so proud of the commitment that you've had to career-oriented education and the strives that you're helping us to make as a state going in that direction. We know that our kids have a numerous amount of different career options, and the earlier that they know about them, the better. So thank you for this great bill.
Thank you, Representative Chambliss. We will now go to Ranking Member Valdez. You are recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dunkley, thank you for bringing forward this great bill and being able to influence our middle school youngsters to think outside the box and look at different careers and have those opportunities. You know, school districts should not just be considered by the zip code, right? We need to expand from that zip code and give the students the opportunities to go see different things. An example of that is our Page and Messenger program. You know, I mean, think about it. We have students that take part in this process early on, and if it weren't for opportunities like that to be able to explore and see things differently, who knows the horizons that they may open up for them. So thank you very much for bringing a bill that will expand children's minds of what the possibilities could be in the many different career choices that are available to them. And I appreciate this bill, and I encourage everyone to vote up on this fabulous bill. Thank you, Rep. Dunkley.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Do we have any more debate from the committee? Very well, I'd like to just make a comment. Representative, I want to thank you and acknowledge your hard work on this. We've had several discussions on it. You delved into it. You came back with a lot of answers, and your commitment to career education, specifically for middle schools students, has really been laudable. Thank you very much. And it's a reminder to me when I was a freshman two sessions ago. One of the first committees that I sat on was Chair McLean's committee on careers and innovation. And we had a sweeping bill for career and technical education in Florida that Representative Mello, now Chair Mello, sponsored. And it was amazing, just all the things that was in there. And it's wonderful to see someone else coming in, a freshman like you, and picking up and saying, you know, we need to tweak this, we need to augment this, we need to enhance what we're doing with career and technical education. And I think this is a great addition to everything that we've been doing, that this legislature has been doing. So thank you very much for doing that. And I look forward to voting up on this bill. Seeing no more debate, Andrea, would you excuse me? Sorry, she did such a great job. I thought she closed anyway. That smile says it all. Representative Dunkley, you are recognized to close on your great bill.
I'm going to wave close, Chair.
Very well. Having waived close on her bill, Andrea, please call the roll.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Amnesty?
Yes.
Baker?
Yes.
Bankson?
Yes.
Basabi?
Yes.
Chambliss?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Oh, yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Nixon? Persons Malika? Porras?
Yes.
Roach? Stark?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
And Chair Rizzo?
Yes.
16 yes, 0 nays.
16, 0. Show that HB 553 by Representative Dunkley is being reported favorably. Thank you very much, and congratulations on your bill moving. That concludes our agenda for this morning. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Bankson moves that we rise.